Amory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery.
This never ceases to amaze me, Don. I sometimes feel like we're going to a fantasy island and experiencing anything and everything we want. There's this article on First Things talking about open marriages but closed hearts. And this conversation about open marriages, it continues. It's almost reading the commentary on it and the mindset. It's somewhat fascinating, the attitude they have going into this. And you're sitting here going like you're about to see a train going off of the train track and it's about to drop over the hill.
Right.
As you're reading it, I mean, there's so much to unpack, but this is a legitimate thing that people are struggling with.
Yeah, open marriages. So polyamory, you can go and have sex with multiple partners, yet so you're still kind of married?
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
You're married, but you can have whatever partners you want. I mean, that's totally okay. There's this story about Daniel and Elizabeth and how they're talking about their story and neither husband and wife essentially were after sexual thrill so much as purpose and a renewed sense of identity. So they were open to having other relationships with other people. And the one woman ends up having Parkinson's.
Yeah, this story, it's in the New York Times Magazine. It asks the question, is an open marriage a happier marriage? And the answer, as you might suspect, is a cautious yes. And like you said, Timmery, before we get into the details of that story, this is interesting on many levels, not least of which to me is the whole propaganda aspect of it. You look at the history of the sexual revolution, or really the history of any movements, but they're always driven by propaganda. They're driven by lies. Somewhere along the line, a bunch of people start telling a bunch of lies, and they're always couched in personal stories about somebody who is experimenting with something that previously society had thought taboo. And, oh,
okay,
my goodness,
now
we experimented with it, and it was fantastic. It was awesome. We loved it. And so you look at things. In fact, we have a propaganda piece later in the show about divorce and the effect it has on children, which is devastating, but we have a piece where the woman just celebrates, oh, it was an awesome thing for my kids and for me. But all of these stories, inevitably, they're either about very, I hesitate to say selfish, but I'm going to say very selfish people who aren't open, their consciences are a bit seared, but actually most of the time, they're just flat out lies. That if you dug into most of these stories, they're simply not true.
Well, and they led on to that, as we'll talk about with one divorce story later on. But this one, I just can't understand. I know I've told this on air, but I have friends who, a lot of friends who work in LA, and one who was looking at going and working in LA, and she was shocked because she was invited over. She knew of a friend who was invited over to someone else's house. They were couples. And the attitude was, is that we'll just come over, have dinner, and then we kind of do this wife swap thing.
Really?
You go to one room, we go to another. And it's amazing that people even have that attitude to begin with. And, you know, people are talking about, have you heard of the NRE? The new relationship energy and how people are seeking.
I was going to ask you, should I know this acronym, Timmery? Because I don't know. Oh, the new relationship energy. Yes.
And how they love that. And it's so interesting because I'm sitting here thinking the NRE and they're talking about this new relationship energy and how you know, yes, you can be married, but you can have this NRE everywhere you go with different experiences and relationships. And it turns into this couple, Daniel and Elizabeth. Well, Elizabeth ends up having Parkinson's. They have an open marriage. And eventually what ends up happening is what starts as a friendship between Elizabeth and her newfound lover, Joseph. They're bonding in solidarity over their shared struggle over Parkinson's. Well, their bond, which in and of itself is great. Someone who's also struggling with Parkinson's and can understand where you're coming from and maybe relate to your family, well, their bond turns into an erotic one. It doesn't stay on the level of what we call in Greek the philia, the friendship, the brotherly love.
Well, what's interesting about that to me is that friendship is what was partially missing in that original relationship, because they were, one, bored, Daniel Elizabeth, the original couple, the one that is now open to having other sexual partners. They were bored in their relationship, and they found that they weren't really close friends. There wasn't a lot of shared interests, like you said. And so that's why you're looking for the new relationship energy, because here we are, we're older now, we don't have much in common, I'm a little bit
bored.
They're lonely,
too. So let's combat that with sexual partners.
Well, and this is, again, so much to this story. Let's start with that. Loneliness combated by sex never actually works. And the reason is you're looking for the wrong things in the wrong places. And I think to delve deep into that, we have to recognize the difference between friendship, like between two people who have shared interest, and love. So eros and philios, if I'm remembering my Greek.
Philia,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Friendship and erotic love. Erotic love is focused on the other person.
Well, eros is just passion, but when it gets into erotica, like erotic, it can become overly focused on passion and pleasure and get into over-sexual.
It can, but classically, the difference between someone who is a friend of yours and someone who is a lover, at least in the classical sense, is that...
I hate that word, lover. Sorry.
It has taken on some different connotations recently. But you would get lost in each other, right? Like, it's focused on each other. The picture is generally two people gazing into each other's eyes and focused on that other person. And you can become in love with being in love, but it's that energy like, oh, I just love you. Now, friendship is not usually the case. You're not actually usually focused on the other person. What happens with friendship is that two people are focused on a third thing, and that's why you become friends. You have mutual interests in whatever, fishing, macrame, whatever it might be. But generally, and we've got some actually great stories about friendship here later in the show, generally you're friends with people that you have at least one common interest. It's very difficult to become friends with a person who you have zero common interests with, right?
But people are kind of making the case that sex and pleasure in the body or experiencing another person's body, that builds a common interest. That builds a connection.
Which it does not, actually. That's what I'm focusing on. So we've misconstrued that now. So we have, okay, I'm going to go have sex with you and use you for my pleasure, making that person an object. There's no friendship actually involved there. Maybe you're interested both in pleasure, but it's always self-focused, actually. And that's why you can have, we've talked about this before on the show, you can actually have sex with someone before knowing their name or before becoming friends with them, and you never become friends with them.
I'm thinking of that Carrie Underwood song where she's singing, I don't even know my last name. My mother would be so ashamed. She got married the night before,
right.
Woke up, there's rings on my hand, looking at the person next to me in bed.
Right. As if we would ever get married these days with that. That's an old-fashioned song, isn't it? Now we would know. We wouldn't know the name and we wouldn't care. You'd leave and you'd never know them again, and maybe you text them next week for a similar thing. It's so sad. But friendship, that's the thing. Friendship's what's missing. Now, friendship within a married relationship certainly can happen. So you can have the philia and the eros, but you have to have some sort of shared interest, like something else.
And sometimes that interest, you know, it's not that you have to both, let's say, love to dance. You don't have to both love to go kayaking. Sometimes that interest can be, I generally do love and care for this other person. And at the heart of friendship is willing the good of the other, wanting them to be a good person, a virtuous person.
That is
a mission.
I would call that love, though. I think that's love. I don't think that's actually necessarily friendship. Like, you can love people that you don't like and that you don't want to spend any time with. Because you have zero, they irritate you, and you have zero interest with them. You can still love them.
You don't have to like them.
No, you don't. You can still seek after their good.
Right.
You can still give of yourself for their good, which is what love is. You could sacrifice yourself for them. Absolutely. That's still not friendship, I would argue, at least classically. Recently, guys like C.S. Lewis with his Four Loves have really developed this. Von Hildebrand is very good at this. Your friendship doesn't necessarily relate to love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to understand, because these people, you notice that the woman who bonded with her lover, and I'm just throwing that out there to irritate you.
I hate that word. It's like a
just
cringe
to mess
word
with your head. They bonded over their shared experience of a disease, right?
Right.
Like they had something in common. That's how they became friends. And I would say that's separate from, and what these families are missing, what these couples are missing, is friendship. And here's the thing. This is what this article in First Things brings out, and I think is fantastically insightful. A lot of the times they're missing friendship because they have not gone with the classic family plan to build friendship among two lovers. Now I'm really just messing with you. And that is having kids.
Right.
Your kids are the third party that cause you to become friends. Like, you are interested in your kids, and as
well,
you,
it gives you a common mission.
Absolutely,
a
it
common
does,
mission.
And that builds friendship.
Well, and it keeps talking about the NRE, the new relationship energy, and how, well, you may be bored and lonely in your relationship, and you have this open marriage, but you're close to having family. Well, you get that new relationship energy when you have a child, and you're introducing the child to your spouse, to godparents, to siblings, to aunts and uncles. You have this new drawn closeness and experience that continues to perpetuate the relationship forward in a deeper bond of love.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So, Dawn, before we took a brief break here, you were talking about how friendship doesn't necessarily demand love. And so I want to tease that out a little bit, because when I think about friendship, we talked about this idea of a common mission or a common joint activity or interests. And at the heart of that, especially studying Aristotle, I have this attitude of within that is willing the good of the other. Friendship is, you don't just have a friendship for the sake of pleasure or for how they can be useful to you, right?
Right,
but you
sure
have this friendship because you want what's good for them at the heart of that friendship.
So I think that's just a label thing. So what you have been describing, I would say, is love. And you can have a relationship with that person, and you are loving them.
It's a friendship, though. Is that what you're
saying? Well, I'm saying, classically, we would distinguish loving relationships, and you can have loving relationships with everyone. Indeed, you should. Indeed, Jesus commands us to love everyone, right?
Right.
But friendship, in the sense that there is a union there that is based on something. Classically, we've looked at friendship as something that has a third aspect to it that two people have in common. And if there is none of that, you're generally not friends. That's all I'm saying. Like, friendship generally requires a third thing in common.
I get what you're saying. I guess when I'm talking about willing the good of the other, like, you're friends with them because you want what's best for them. And so your effort toward them is constantly working toward the betterment of both of you.
And you're saying you don't have anything in common with them?
I'm not saying that you don't have it. It has nothing to do with something in common, but that's at the heart of there's this invested interest in the other person.
I certainly think we can have invested interest in them, and that we can be friends in one sense. But I feel like if there's nothing that you bond over, if there's nothing that you share in common,
right,
there is a danger that one side of that will feel like a project to the other one.
Absolutely. It shouldn't be like missionary friendship or missionary dating.
Right, right.
That is an issue. It's one thing for something to be a mission where you're trying to help someone. It's another when it's your friendship, and it needs to be an equal playing field.
Well, yeah, I just think friends, generally, you're going to have a hard time being friends with people that you have zero in common
with.
That's
a great distinction.
That's all. And this is important when we talk about loneliness in our culture, because I think loneliness is an epidemic, and even among married people. And this is what this First Things article was talking about. This epidemic of loneliness among married people is causing some of them to have open relationships, thinking that if I go have sex with other people, I won't be lonely anymore. Now, that's not working, because sex is not what draws you together in friendship.
Right.
What you're doing is using other people. Where these people are actually finding what we called the new relationship energy,
NRE.
The NRE, is in finding friends.
Right.
Now, one of the reasons they're not friends with their spouse, we argued, and so did the author of this First Things piece, is that they don't have kids. And when families don't have kids, there isn't as much in common between the partners to build a friendship. And the article, I think, is very insightful in saying, historically, you know what provides energy again and again in a relationship is when you have the new kids. It's also tiring and all the rest of it. But there is a certain shared bond that parents have for their kids. And it does provide an energy. And hopefully, it provides friendship. And I know this is derided in our culture. The whole idea that, well, you guys never talk about anything but your kids, and you guys need some time alone where you talk about something besides your kids. And I get it. I mean, I get what you're trying to say there. But you know what? Being parents to our kids, it's fantastic. And it's like something we like to talk about. And it's our life. And what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, right. It actually is part of our calling to be drawn together as friends in raising our children.
And that doesn't mean you don't talk about anything
else. Of course you talk about other stuff.
Good grief. Well, and this is what kind of bothers me. If you're looking through the First Things article here, you're talking about Elizabeth and Daniel, who are married. Elizabeth now bonds with Joseph over their shared Parkinson's. It turns into a sexual relationship. Well, guess what? At the heart of this, and as you get closer to the end of the article, you end up discovering that Daniel, Elizabeth, and Joseph, who now have this three-way partnership, essentially, are completely careless in what they're doing. Joseph is married, and his wife has no idea about his relationship with Elizabeth. So is that a real friendship? Are you really sharing this common interest just over Parkinson's disease, yet you're completely ignoring that this man has a wife, and she's not going to be okay with you sleeping with her husband?
Yeah. Well, and I would say, again, it's a little bit of semantics, but I would say they have the friendship, but now they're not loving. And it's in the same way that you can love somebody without being their friend. You can be friends with people and still not love them and still do things for their harm. And certainly that's what's happening there. You know, it's another example, I feel like, Timory, of the sexual revolution. What happened here? This couple has been told, we don't want you to have kids. We don't want you to be tied down. You got to wait till later in life, and kids are just a hassle. And now they're struggling. They're lonely. I think due in large degree to the fact that they didn't have kids and chase after that.
Right.
But they're not the only ones. There is a very intriguing article in the Federalist recently. Here's the title of it. I bake new neighbors bread to welcome them, and they never say hello to me again. And it's about an elderly woman who has lived here in Southern California for the last 22 years. And she says, I don't know anyone.
She's lived in the same neighborhood for 22 years. She moved here when she was an empty nester, settling down. Other similar empty nester families are here. Yet no one says hello. No one has this response after she goes and offers this, you know, peace token of, hey, that's welcome to the neighborhood.
Yeah, she goes and gives them bread. She's even had little get-togethers in her house, a coffee klatch, and asked people to come over. And either they did and then left and never said hello to her again, or they didn't come over. And she says, I'm just lonely. And it's not like the place I lived in previously. she says. In that place, we had friends, we had bowling teams, we had barbecues, we went to school functions, we belonged to the parent-teacher association, we enjoyed a full life. But we came here with no kids, and all these empty nesters around me are simply not open to friendship. And again, I think this relates really closely to what we've just been talking about. And it's another example of a consequence of the sexual revolution. So what happens with the sexual revolution? We've been told that as women, for example, don't have kids. If you have kids at all, have them much later in life. First, you have to go and get a job and a career, and marriage is always pushed back if indeed you do get married, and that's not necessarily at all. So what you have is a culture where you have a lot less kids, and the kids we do have are spread out all over the country because as part of growing up now in America, we have to move a lot. People are moving all over the place for what? For jobs, for money, right? Because that's what we've been told. And so especially here in Southern California, hardly anybody is actually like from here.
Yeah. Right.
We're all from everywhere else, like you and like me, right? And everybody else we know. And I live in one of these neighborhoods and I don't know that many of my neighbors. And here's the thing. I'm not that concerned about it. Okay. And here's why. Because I understand why I don't know them. In the past, in my little cul-de-sac, everybody knew everybody. And
the
here's
kids played with each other.
Exactly right, Timory. Here's the thing. Everybody had something in common. They all had kids about the same age. And those kids would go out and play in the cul-de-sac. And those people who have kids of the same age, those are who you're friends with. And so I am friends with some people in my cul-de-sac. It's the neighbors who have kids that are the same age as my kids. They're always in my backyard. They're the ones on the Ninja Warrior course, right?
But there's a sense of responsibility for one another's families in the area as well, because you know each other. There's an effort. There's a shared interest in your children. It's interesting you say that, because so my parents live in a cul-de-sac. They moved from where we grew up in a small mountain community. And the other day I was home and my little sister was walking around the cul-de-sac doing something. And this guy comes out of the house next door, comes storming out, jumps in his car, comes slamming on the gas, skids coming out of the driveway. My little sister was probably about 10 feet away from walking across that exact driveway. The guy didn't even look. Had she been walking right there, she would have been nailed. And in that moment, it actually reminded me of how we no longer have a sense of responsibility or shared interest in our communities. He could care less whether or not there was a two-year-old running across the street right then. And I think it goes back to this. We don't know our neighbors. We don't know who is around us. There's a lack of just basic awareness.
Well, but it goes to, we have nothing in common with those people.
Right.
I mean, not only are there no other kids, but there's a wide variety of ages and life situations in our neighborhood. Frankly, there's a wide variety of cultures. We've got people from all over the world on my cul-de-sac. And so what do we have in common with each other? Very, very little. You look at the author of this article, who's older, she says, what did we have? This is the sentence she used when we had friends. Bowling teams, barbecues, school functions, parent teacher associations. You get together over something shared, and it all starts, frankly, with that parent-teacher association. Because then you go to the barbecues, and then you have the school functions, again, a shared third interest. Friendship only develops when we have that third interest. And in our communities today, people simply don't have a shared third interest. So what we do is we commute to go and meet with people who have a shared interest with us. So if you're young and you're college age, you're going to find all the local college age and you're going to meet at the local church or wherever it is. Or if
we have more focused interests now, like if you like surfing, you just get to know your surfing club friends or those people who just like surfing. We've separated out more and more. In some ways, that's not bad. But I think in a lot of ways, this woman, Mrs. Kistler, in her story about baking the bread, she even talks about how she puts together a little party. She gets donuts and fruit and coffee, and she invites all the neighbors, and only six people end up coming. Not only that, but not a single one of them end up touching any of the food. And how, to me, it actually just stands out as that's kind of just rude. That's not even basic manners. If people offer you food, you have even just a little bit of whatever it is. And she recognizes few people come and no one even wants to eat the food that I offer.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
I want you to think about the people that you are friends with, and then ask, is there something that you have in common with those people? Then think about the people that maybe you were friends with in the past, but aren't anymore. What changed? It could be that they did something to offend you, and I get that. Sometimes, you know, your character gets in the way. But I think often it's actually just life circumstances change and your interests are not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, this whole notion of friendship requiring a shared interest is very big in our culture because we have an epidemic of loneliness. People don't have any friends, or they don't have very many friends. And I think one of the reasons is they don't realize that in order to have friends, we need to have something in common. And we have less and less in common with each other as we have sought after things that traditionally people wouldn't search after. So, for example, traditionally, you'd grow up in a community with the notion that I'm going to stay not too far from this community and raise my family so that my kids can be close to their grandparents and all the rest of it. Usually, you'd have communities that were very tight based on the notion that the primary goal in life is to raise a solid family. That's what it's all about. Raise great kids. Now, that's not the goal. Frankly, of hardly anybody's life, or at least that's not what society tells us. Your goal is not to raise great kids. It's for you to find personal fulfillment through sex, money, and power. That's the message of the culture. As you get sex, money, power, usually through some sort of fame, you will be happy. Kids are a detriment to that, and therefore, family has broken down, and guess what else? All those shared common interests that we would have in that community when you sat there and raised kids have been lost as people have traveled all over the country chasing after their jobs and not having kids. I think, to me, Timory, it's just natural that we have less friends because our society is not set up for people to live together in a situation where you have shared interests.
Well, and I think it's challenging, too, because you have many millennials who are no longer marrying. And yet you have some who are, and I even experience within my age demographic, really, I have a lot of friends who are married. A lot of them have newborn babies or little children. And it becomes more and more challenging trying to maintain friendships with these wonderful friends that you had that had maybe different interests, but they have children now and I don't. And so I love babies and it's great, but they're also, they're sole focus.
Let's be honest now. You're no, okay.
They're sole focus. I love babies. Children can be annoying.
Yeah, children. Yeah, babies. Okay, I'll give you that one.
Not well-behaved children. And it's challenging because you have to continuously try to find, well, how can we talk? Yes, enjoy talking about the baby, right? But also enjoy talking about other things and doing things together.
It is hard.
I see a lot of people who, I have friends who refuse to hang out with other friends who have children. They said, well, there's nothing in it for me. And I just laugh. I'm like, well, what about your friendship? Push through it a little bit.
Well, here's the thing.
It's a little selfish.
Yeah, you're right. Of course, you're right that we can't just look at it, well, what's in it for me? But on the other hand, I feel bad for all of those, because this is what happens, right? I've been through it myself. Friendships change as people get married and have kids. Right. Of course they do. The friendships change. You're just not as close friends because of a different life circumstance. And I feel bad because both sides generally feel guilty, right?
Right.
Like the new mom is feeling guilty that she's not hanging out with all of her old friends when they go out on a Friday night because she's exhausted and she's got other interests. And the other friends feel guilty because, oh, you know, I'm just tired of talking about the kid. I just, you know, I don't want to anymore. I don't have one. It's not that interesting to me. And so here's the thing. I think both sides can continue to love each other, but I think it's perfectly okay. And again, this is where the language is important. It's perfectly okay for them not to be as the same type of friends. I was going to say as close. And I just think it's different. But that's the nature of friendship. And it's okay to understand that.
Yeah, I think it's both and. I think that there's a difference between, okay, it's growing apart and also a lot of people, friends I have, who'll just say, I just won't spend time with them anymore. They just talk about their kid and that's it. And I think that sometimes we miss the point of our friendships. And that is, it's not just about the pleasure we receive from our friendship, but truly we love that person. And I guess, too, part of this for me enters into the area of having siblings as well. I love my siblings. I'm very close to my siblings. A lot of people aren't anymore. And if one of my sisters has a kid and I didn't, or vice versa, I would hope that there would continue to be this invested interest and care there. And if siblings can do that, why is it that we often can't as friends as well?
Well, siblings are different, right? You can be friends with your siblings and you can not be friends, but you can still love them.
Right.
But that generally is different than friendships outside of family. And I think the family is a unique organism where you have something even more in common with each other.
But a lot of people don't parents. Have that anymore.
Well, and again, unfortunately not, right? So you've got these different loves out there, or these different types of friendships. Again, it's language a little bit, but it's important to distinguish. And I think people are confused by that. And so they think, well, I have to have these feelings for everyone if I'm going to love them. No, you don't. You don't have to have any feelings for anybody. You can still love everybody. Well, I want to, you know, have eros with my spouse. Yes, you should have that, and that's should be there, and you can build that up. I want to be friends with everyone. No, you can't be friends with everyone. And frankly, sometimes this irritates me in church ministry, where the women's group or the men's group or the whatever group, and at least they're having a group that's some commonality, but, well, you just need to go and fellowship with those folks.
Oh.
And you're like, I have zero in common with those people.
I'm not a women's group individual. Well, I'm sorry. I don't identify with that.
See, this is the thing, right? And I am past the point of feeling guilty about that, because I just say, listen, I do not have anything in common. I cannot be friends with someone. I can love them, but I cannot be friends with someone I don't have anything in common with. And that realization has freed me a little bit. But it also shows me that sometimes I need to go work on finding people that I do have something in common with and building those. That's not, you know, yes, we can do all of that. In our culture, I think that's helpful to sort of bring this around. All of these lonely people, part of it is your families are broken. You've moved around so much. You don't have people that normally we would have as friends. We don't have the people who are there with kids your age. You don't have the cousins who are your age. You don't have all of that stuff. Normally, that would provide the majority of our friendships in a culture.
So that you weren't so lonely.
You wouldn't be lonely. If you grew up in the same town and everybody else lived there the same, and you all had kids at the same time, you're not going to be lonely.
Well, and that reminds me of a dear friend that I have. Wonderful, wonderful friend. Both her and I are, you know, not like most of our friends who are married with children right now. And she recently decided to make a big life change. She's in her early 30s, and she moved back to one of her hometown cities because she recognizes, look, there's a possibility I might not get married. I would love to. You know, I'm working really hard in the meantime, but I need to be close to my roots. I need to be closer to this area so that I do have those relationships and I can settle down here rather than maybe feeling like I'm isolated or chasing in some ways those friendships. And so it was really tough because there's someone I loved having nearby was probably the one individual who had a kind of similar life circumstances.
Yeah.
But you recognize she had to do what was best so that she wasn't sitting in the midst of deep loneliness.
Absolutely. And you think about geography. Geography in and of itself provides a lot of that common element that we need to have friends. And so, you know, we sort of dismiss talking about the weather. But why do we talk about the weather when we meet with people? Because we have it in common, right? Like I'm just searching for something that we can have in common to relate to you. Otherwise, friendship is impossible. So at least we have the weather. Hey, it's raining today. We both experienced that. Why is pop culture such a friendship-inducing thing? Like, so we gather around movies because we share them in common, or sports teams. I mean, you know, again, guys are derided because we talk about sports when we get together. You know why we talk about sports? Because, you know what? I don't have your job in common. I have no idea what you do, and I don't care. care and you don't care about what I do. And we have different life experiences. I grew up in a completely different place than you did. And your family's way different. I mean, we just don't have much in common, but at least we both like football. And so, and so we bond over football. It's okay. That's the nature of friendships, right? Obviously, we want to take that to a deeper level.
Well,
but just recognizing that, I think, is helpful.
Right. And that also shows that you are creating circumstances to have friendships.
Yeah.
So let's all watch a football game together. Let's gather around this. Or I'm thinking of your Ninja Warrior course
exactly.
right now. Hey, let's create this Ninja Warrior course and kids, invite your friends over. Here's something we can bond over.
Yeah. That's, you just need that shared experience. And unfortunately, our culture, there just is very few. And this woman writing about how she baked bread, the Southern, I mean, I feel her experience.
Right.
The Southern California experience is that we are all from different places. We all have different backgrounds. We all have different life experiences. It is very difficult to come together over something. We don't, even geography doesn't really work in Southern California because our small towns, they're all one big city. So,
right.
Hey, I'm from Orange. Let's, no. I mean, you know, right? Tustin, Tustin forever. Like, it's, no, like, it's, that's not going to happen. Even, I mean, Huntington Beach is a little bit actually more small towny feel, but now not so much. I mean, thousands and thousands of apartments, people are from everywhere. So, you know, surfing or, okay, but it's just very difficult. I would suggest if you want more friends to be less lonely, don't look for it in sex. That's
please no.
Well, and this is what they're doing, right? Like a lot of people think, oh, you're not going to bond over sex except for in a bad way. You know, you're going to share DNA and share psychology, all that. Yes, you are, but it's not going to be in a friendship way.
You're bonding on a physical, emotional, psychological level,
but not on a friendship level. In fact, it's going to hurt your friendship. But look for people who have some sort of similar life experiences. And maybe if it means moving back to where your family grew up and you can have a lot of people who had a similar life upbringing.
Right.
That's okay.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
One of the things that continues to strike me, Don, about this whole conversation over loneliness, lack of friendship, open marriages, is the idea of intimate but non-romantic friendships. And there was a piece that I had pulled up from a few years back in The Atlantic, and it talks about just this and how the author, I have to pull up the name, but the author is essentially looking through mid-19th century movies and education, looking at ladyhood and how women kind of develop and they're going to school together. And what ends up standing out to the author, Ta Coates, is he ends up talking about how there's this deep intimacy that takes place among two women or two young men, and how it's so normal, and how it, even as he's sitting there reading through some of the literature, there's this piece where it's talking about this woman, and she's reading, "I sit and think of Bessie and fancy her by me with a little sweet hand in mind and that soft cheek that laid close by mine, and then I hear her sweet voice." And how his first reaction looking at some of this literature is, sounds like they're homosexual.
Right.
But they're not. And, you know, I read this and it reminds me of the original Anne of Green Gables and the relationship between Anne with Diana in the Canadian version.
Yeah.
And how they had this deep intimacy in their friendships. Or reminds me of my friendships growing up and these deep intimacies, and how I think anymore people are nervous to become too close, because they're fearful that that intimacy might be perceived as homosexuality or be talked about and looked at in the wrong way when it's not. And I think we fear this, even especially among young men today.
Oh, absolutely. We fear this because if you are someone who likes to share of yourself, and listen, this is everybody. Everybody wants to know and be known because we're made for love. And
right.
So at its root, we are people who want you to know me and I want to know you, But the reason we don't is that we don't think it's safe, right? Like, so we put up these shields because I think if you know me, you're going to hurt me. You're not going to like me. So we put up the shields and we don't let each other get to know. Now, unfortunately, in our hypersexualized society, we have substituted sex for true knowing. And so we think, all right, you're not going to know me, but
my body,
you can know. And I think that's what all these young girls, frankly, girls more so than men, probably. Men are just more open with, I'm going to use you and you can use me and whatever. Young women, when they give their bodies to someone, I think what they're asking for is intimacy, that I want you to know me. I want to be vulnerable before you and have you know me and be okay with it and like it. But that's not actually what's going to happen through that sex, but through friendship.
Right.
That's what you would get.
Well, and a lot of the time, young women are willing to have sex earlier on because they think that in knowing them on a physical level, that it'll take them into a deeper knowledge of, you'll know me on my physical matter, you'll know who I am then. But that's not happening. You said something that really struck me. You said, if someone knows me, they can then hurt me. And I think that this is a real issue. So many people are carrying just deep, deep wounds anymore in our culture, and they're fearful to let someone know them too intimately because it's going to get a little too close to that pain, and to open back up to that pain and then open up to the pain of knowing that this person then might leave me still.
Right.
That's where even getting back to the friendships and how we grow apart, it's okay to grow apart, but at the same time, we've got to let people know they're not being abandoned.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, we need to be people who aren't going to hurt each other, right?
Yes.
Deep friendship, deep intimacy really isn't going to be possible with people who hurt each other. And then, of course, if you go back to the garden, I mean, this is why God put clothes on us, right? Because we do need to be protected. There is a certain sense in which we aren't all saints now, and we will hurt each other. But as we increase in virtue and are people who won't hurt each other, then that intimacy is possible. That's what we're all missing. Like, we want that as we've become a less virtuous society. Friendships have become less possible, I think, because we are people who hurt each other, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, I just read the Daniel Mattson book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. Fantastic book. We're going to have him on here in an upcoming show. I'm looking forward to that. But he, in the book, is very insightful, I think, and very self-reflective about what he was actually searching for when he entered into gay sexual relationships. What he wanted was friendship. And he has a great section on friendship in there. And he's like, I really just wanted to be friends with the guy he actually did the first man he had sex with. He's like, actually, we weren't really there for the sex. And when I realized that I couldn't be friends in the way I wanted, that's sort of when it broke off. Like, when I realized, oh, friendship is what I've been after this whole time.
But this took the relationship in a different direction.
And the sex was a problem, right? And
right.
But and that most people he met were not after the friendship, or at least not openly, right? I think we're all after the friendship.
Well, and I think that it appeals to something. I remember Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse. I love her and her work. And I was at one of her talks a couple years ago, and she looked at the men in the audience talking about this exact issue. And she said something along the lines of, I beg you, men, she said, have good relationships with other men, even if they're gay. Do not be afraid to go and say, hey, let's go fishing. Let's do whatever it might be. Find this common interest, you know, sports, fishing. It's easier for men, I think, sometimes to have that common interest that doesn't involve talking as much.
Sure. Well, but that's the whole point, right? Friendship is not about talking necessarily. It's about sharing that third thing. It's about losing yourself in some third thing. Fishing is fine.
Well, and I think that that's the core for young women who are struggling with friendship. If you can find a common interest, that actually helps you get over the element of gossiping. I was telling a friend of mine recently, my sister, just the other day, I said, I have a friend who I love dearly. It's really tough. Every time we get together, she just wants to gossip. As a person, she's great. I would love to spend time with her, but I feel like I'm having to throw roadblock after roadblock up in front of her. Like, I'm literally verbally dueling with her, trying not to go down that path. And I finally looked at my sister and I said, I just need to find a common interest, something that we can do with our hands together, whether it's, you know, painting something, I don't know what, but it's really tough and I'm trying to maintain this friendship. And I think that that's where we can learn from you men, and that you guys go, let's go fishing or whatever it might be. And you don't have to talk.
That's a really good insight. If the thing you have in common is talking about a third person,
right?
That's not the kind of friendship you want to build. So that's a good point. You know, Daniel Mattson in this book, one of the reasons he doesn't call himself gay is that, and there's many, and we'll talk to him again upcoming on the show, so stay tuned for that. But he says when somebody, quote, comes out, and he hates the whole term, like the whole identity thing is anathema to him, right? I don't want to be identified as this, because he says all of those friendships are often lost because when you get identified as gay rather than as just a man who happens to have same-sex attraction, people can't relate to you anymore. It's like you're a different person. He says, I want the friendships. Yes, of course we should be friends with gay men, because to not be friends because of who they are, well, that is bigotry, right? But there probably is something you have in common, and there's something that they have in common with you that they're more than happy to be friends about. He's like, I wanted to be friends with other guys, and in, one of the reasons I don't call myself gay is that when I people say that, those friendships get blocked off.
Right.
He's like, of course we have shared interests, whether it's, he's not a sports fan, but whatever's interests you, maybe it's football, but whatever, that's okay. You can still build those friendships. So absolutely, we should be maintaining friendships with people who have same-sex attraction.
Now, the struggle can be, though, is when you're in these circumstances, because I did actually end up having a roommate, lived in an apartment with a bunch of girls, and one of the roommates ended up living in a same-sex relationship, a gay lifestyle. And it was really tough because it got to the point where that was a lot of what was being pushed forward. And there was no effort within the small community that we had in this apartment to maintain friendships. What was being pushed was, this is my lifestyle and this is what I'm bringing into the apartment. And so there are different issues. I think that there's also an element of whether or not they're making an effort or will be receptive to the effort as well.
Well, and again, I go back to this. I know this sounds harsh, but you don't have to be friends with everybody.
Thank you. That, but a lot of people feel guilty over that.
This is why it's so important, this definitions. And we've talked a lot about just definitions. Love everybody, yes, which means sacrifice yourself for their good. Oftentimes that might mean I'm not going to spend any more time with you. And, you know, right? Because
it's better for you and me.
It's better for you and me. So I want your best. Or maybe it's I have to confront you with this truth. That's how I'm going to love you. It may break our friendship. Loving some people may cause a break in the friendship.
And that's very important to recognize. It's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, because that's you're commanded to love. You're not commanded to be friends with everybody. In fact, I would suggest it's impossible to be authentically friends with everybody.
Right. Or to live in their sin if you can't keep, just like that friend who always wants to gossip. If that can't be kept at bay, if she can't come past into another part of our friendship, I can't keep that friendship. You know, it might be one day we enjoyed a common interest of going to school together, but, you know, things do change and fizzle out at times. And you have to allow that.
And Jesus promised this would happen, actually, by the way. Relationships would be broken as you follow Jesus. So, again, Jesus commands to love. He does not command that you have to be in a situation where you're friends with everybody. And what does that even mean, frankly, right? That they think you're an okay person, that you're polite to each other, right?
You can't be friends with everyone.
What does it even mean to be friends, right? Yes. And that's the thing. There's variations. I would argue that as we moved away from the nuclear family and growing, the friendships are much more difficult. That's the way it is. You know, that's the way our society is right now. Here I am in Southern California. I get it. You know, you give up a lot of friendship type things being that far. But understanding that and still saying, all right, we're going to work towards whatever friendships we can and continue to love each other without being guilty for not being friends with people, I think is fine.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.